Hey there, you're with Disembodied Podcast. This is Evie Escher. This week's guest is Laura Giles. Laura has over 20 years as a holistic trauma therapist and spiritual tour facilitator. At some point, this led her to believe that what we're missing is each other, connection. Her mission is to change 100,000 lives and reach a tipping point where we can all feel safe, connected, and a part of this earthling family. This is all possible through healthy relationships, of course. Many of us are searching for this elusive something that will make us feel life is meaningful. We go after ephemeral things like money, success, sex, beauty, but they don't really satisfy us ultimately. Laura's approach is holistic. Her work starts at the beginning with creating stability because it's hard to grow while you're in crisis. She also supports learning skills to maintain stability, finding ourselves, then connecting to individuals, groups, and in turn, the universe. We're going to talk a little about animism in this interview, the belief that you can recognize a soul in plants, objects, and natural phenomena. That's something Laura herself grew up with. So let's get started. Here we go. Okay, Laura, welcome to Disembodied Podcast. It's great to have you.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I'm interested in getting to know you better and how you see the world. You're interested in, well, actually, you are animistic in your belief system. Can you describe how you got to that point? I mean, were you raised with it or did you kind of take it on?
Yeah, so my mom is animist. And so I just grew up with it. And I didn't really know anything different because that was just my whole life. Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I had friends who were Christians and I talked to somebody else about this. We had a lot of missionaries in the neighborhood and there were revivals and lots of Baptists and maybe Pentecostal and revivals. And so I was aware of other religions, but it just was like other things that were around me. It didn't really feel all that different because as an animist, everything is related. And everything is sacred. So I didn't really know that there was any difference until it pops up in conversations sometimes. And you know, I'll say something to people is like, wow, what are you talking about? That's so strange. You know, that's how it stands out to me as, oh, you don't do that? It's kind of like that.
So what types of practices were you raised with or beliefs were you raised with from your mom?
Mostly it was just the honoring of all things and just an awareness of the life and the life force and everything. So it wasn't so much rituals, things like that. I do that now to just be more intentional with touching points with spirit and with nature. But growing up, there really wasn't a whole lot of that, unless it was something like a funeral. It was really more just like how you eat. And how you respect the food that you eat, how you plant, things like that.
Okay. Yeah. And where's your mother from?
She's from Asia.
Oh, wow. What part of Asia?
I'd rather not say.
Okay.
let me explain to you why. So In recent years, there's been this big push for shamanism. And there's a lot of, I do spiritual tours. And I've been doing that for like 24 years, and there's been a gigantic shift in the tourism community. And it's driven, at least what I see, because I do spiritual tourism, by that. And so you see all these people going to these countries and they are profiting off the culture and it changes the culture. So my mom is from a place where there has not been a lot of influence from outsiders. And I would like to protect that. I would hate to see Made in China there. I would hate to see just the infiltration of the culture and the ruining of it. So I don't really say.
Okay, that's fair enough. We know it's not China.
It's not China.
Okay, so let's talk about being a spiritual tour facilitator. You're talking more inner journeys, right?
Yes. So the first time... It kind of landed on me. I didn't intend for that to happen, But I was working really, really hard, and it was just a grind day after day after day. It was so busy, and I just needed a break. So I was ready to go anywhere. And I'm looking, where can I go? Where can I go? And Egypt was just so easy. They had packages. Everything was done for you. It wasn't like I had to plan anything. I could just hop on a plane and go. So I went to Egypt. And I didn't really have a whole lot of desire to go to Egypt. It was just easy. And when I got there, I was blown away. It just shook something in me to my core. And every single day, it was magical. And every time I thought, you know, it couldn't get any better than this, it did. And it was in the little things, the way that a taxi would go down the street with its music playing. It was the call to prayer in the mornings, the way that the wind was blowing. Everything just touched me so deeply. And it seemed like they were just ordinary things, but it was so filled with spirit and with meaning. And it just touched me in a way that I just had to know, what is this thing? And at first I thought it came from Egypt, and Egypt is a magical place. So I don't want to take anything away from Egypt. But as I started going to different places, then I realized it's more than just Egypt. It's kind of taking that animism spirit where everything is alive and sacred. And there are certain things where, and certain people in certain places where it's magnified. And so I built my touring company around that, to those sacred places, because I thought it would open people up. I thought it would open me up. And I think I said that I have been doing this for about 24 years, and my spiritual journey has evolved. And I'm realizing now that, yes, that is true. There are power places in the world, but the thing that brings it the magic is you. So you have to show up for it. And I've had people who really didn't, and they didn't get a whole lot. That doesn't happen often, but you have to bring it too.
So what types of experiences are people having when you're the tour facilitator?
Oh, it's so varied. Big picture, what tends to happen is that there are breakthroughs. So old stuff just comes to the surface and releases. I've seen lots and lots of people just break down crying with relief that something is just gone. And it's easy, typically. And I think part of it is that they're in a safe space, not just the land space, but the people that they're with. So I'm also a licensed clinical social worker, and I'm a trauma therapist. So if somebody needs something, I certainly can do that. Typically, I don't have to assist, though. All I have to do is witness, and they'll do it themselves. So it's so elegant and beautiful the way that it all works out. I think when you have that container of safety and you have permission, we can heal ourselves. And I think that's really what happens. You have the energy of the place, you have your intention, you have the group, you have me. And it just goes, however that looks. It can look like a crying fit. It can look like just breaking out singing. We had a girl once who she lost her voice, not literally, but she was made fun of when she was young, and she stopped singing. And then we went to a place in Peru, and all of a sudden she's singing. And it's delightful, you know, but it was new. I'm like, hey, what's going on with you? And she's like, I got my voice back. And she's had it ever since. So things like that happen.
So how many people are in the group, if this is a group thing that you're doing?
It's always small. So my tour size is never more than 16. The first one was bigger than that, and it just takes a lot out of you. So 16 is about my maximum.
Yeah, I can imagine dealing with emotions that are being dredged up is probably a lot to handle.
Yeah.
Is it older people going on these journeys, or is it younger people more?
It's both. It's funny how about year 10, I used to vet people and think, oh, this will be a good tour for you. This is not a good tour for you. But about year 10, I stopped doing that and started going with whoever's meant to be here will be here. And that's really true. So the dynamic of one group will be totally different than another one. And they are just the people who need to be there. So with age group, we could even have really older people and really young people, and somehow it just works. It doesn't typically happen. Usually it's more homogeneous than that. But when it has, it's worked anyway.
I would love to talk about some of the places you go to, because I love travel. And, you know, I do think each place has, you know, even if we're talking beyond travel, like in an animistic sense, every place has like its own spirit in a way, its own character, its own profile. What are your favorite places to go to physically and why?
For a while, it was Egypt, anywhere in Egypt. I think that's because that's where the magic was turned on. And then after the Arab Spring, it was England. And I didn't think England, you know?
That's kind of random.
One of my friends really raved about it. And so I thought I would go on a ancestor pilgrimage. So I went by myself. And I went to a lot of places where my ancestors were from. And, you know, they have Stonehenge and they have lots of sacred sites there. And yep. I visited that too, because I had to, you know, this is what I do. And I was just really so surprised how that DNA kicked in. When I am someplace where my ancestors have lived, it's a completely different experience than a place that I have no connection to. And I don't even have to know that my ancestors lived there. I can just feel it now. You know, I do genealogy pretty extensively, but I don't know everything. So when something pings me and it's just like, oh, I know this place. It's just a kind of a gut feeling, a familiarity. I'll look or I'll ask my dad and it's always right there. So even I'm from the Midwest, I'm from Ohio. And I went to this town where my dad's mom's dad's side was from for hundreds of years, never been there before that I can remember. And it was really like going home. It felt like I could just smell everything. It smelled like I had been here before. And the sounds were like, it just felt so comforting. So it doesn't really, my destinations don't have to be somewhere big like Machu Picchu or the pyramids or Stonehenge, although I like those places too. There's a lot of hidden gems that you might not think are all that spectacular, and they just have juice that overflows. We followed the Mary Michael line in England, which is a ley line. And they have all these little churches along that line. And it ends there at St. Michael's Mount in Penzance, or right around Penzance. And all along those little tiny churches, they're so tiny. It's like you probably couldn't fit a dozen people in them. They're small. You know, on some of them, I would just be brought to my knees with how spirit-filled the place was. And when we got to St. Michael's Mount, I literally was on my knees. I crossed the threshold. So we're walking around the island. And then I get into, I don't know if it was the chapel or something, but one particular room in the church. And I was literally on my knees. I could not get up. I could not breathe. It was just this sweetness that went on forever. And usually what'll happen is that my body will kind of regulate to the frequency. And then it's still sweet, but I can breathe, you know? I can recover. It was never ending. And there's all these people around me and they're walking around like, you know, normal. And I'm like, how can you not feel this? This is, oh my God, you know, and I'm not a drama queen at all, but you know, if it's there, it's there. So I didn't know that was going to happen. And I really love it when that happens and you get that surprise and something you're not looking for and it just jumps out and it's right there. And it's just like, wow.
Yeah, I can really understand it actually, because when I was a kid, I was obsessed with living in Europe and wanting to go to Europe. And I did actually make it happen. I not only went to Europe when I was a teenager with my parents once, but I also ended up living there a few years later in my 20s. And I felt like I was coming home. You know, I went to Germany and the German language really drew me in. And I studied German and I learned how to speak it fluently and all of that. And just the experience of being there, it was kind of like I was home again. And I stayed for about 3.5 years. And then I did come back to the US because I felt like my opportunities as a non-citizen there were not very good work-wise. But I still kind of miss Europe a lot. I'm going to Ireland again later this year, but I really like Ireland and England, and I haven't yet been to Scandinavia, and I do have some ancestry from that area as well. But the places I have been in Europe, it's like, it just feels like I'm kind of visiting my hometown again sometimes. And I feel an odd kinship sometimes with the people, even though I don't know them. You know, I was telling you earlier when we talked that I do wish I had ancestry from Asia somewhat, because I always feel inclined to like go to India and different places. And, you know, that's a bigger trip and I haven't really taken it but there's some draw. I do love Asia and I would really like to go there. I think sometimes the older I get, I think, am I going to enjoy it? I guess I worry about food not agreeing with me, even though I eat a lot of Asian food here. But you always worry about something not working out for you, you know, going to countries that you're not familiar with and you're not, oh, I don't know. I guess it's kind of like a digestive fragility or something. I don't know what I'm referring to, but you know, you can get sick in other places. And I sometimes talk to people who go to Bali and wherever, and they get sick and, you know, have to get some medical care. And it kind of scares me. I guess it kind of makes me nervous. But, you know, I would like to get over that and actually go to these places somewhat myself. I've spent too much time in Europe and I feel like it's kind of redundant to keep doing that, even though there are lots of places in Europe that are just full of life for me, just like you experienced. So where haven't you been that you would like to go?
Haven't yet been to Uluru in Australia. So the earth has chakras just like we do. And I've been to all of them except that one. So it's kind of a bucket list, like check it off the list because it's, you know, finish up that sequence. But also it's the navel of the world. You know, that's where the oldest people are from, 40,000 years of the same culture. I think that's really fascinating. And the didgeridoo and just the indigenous culture and their spirituality, I think it would be fascinating. It's so different than anything that I've ever seen or done before. And I like that. That's a draw for sure. I don't think I have any ancestry there. I think that is a little bit of a reason not to go because it's not as juicy if I don't have that connection. But still, I think it's irresistible. I would love to do that somewhat soon.
Well, we should say that, you know, ancestry DNA only goes like 5 generations back. So you don't know if you don't, I mean, it could be further back is what I'm saying, that ancestry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. So I do genealogy and there's a service called GEDmatch where you can upload your genealogy and it shows your archaic. So generations ago, and it'll tell you if you have like a Neanderthal, like where your ancestors were 50,000 years ago. I don't know if you have heard of the Denisova, but they're another, I don't know if they're Homo sapiens sapien. I don't think they are. I think there's like a Neanderthal group, but I have some of that in there. I have a Kennewick man, which is the oldest Native American found here. So it can show you some really old stuff, which is really fun, I think.
How does it do that, though? How does it track it that far back?
I'm guessing, I don't really know. I'm guessing, you know, when they have these digs and they find some DNA, if you have a trace of that, I guess. I'm not really sure. And then maybe it's mitochondrial because mitochondrial is supposed to be easier to trace. I don't know. I'm not the DNA person.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So let's talk about some other things that you're kind of experiencing, helping other people experience, like platonic intimacy is something that you're into. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. So I think as a therapist, the thing that a lot of people struggle with is in one way or another relationships. You know, everybody wants to be loved. And everybody wants to feel a sense of belonging, or sometimes people don't want that. And that's a way of coping with the disappointment of not having that. So my belief is that a meaningful life comes down to belonging and feeling connected. And if you're putting all those eggs in one basket in that your partner, your lover, that's a really tough role to fill for anybody. But if you look at your neighborhood, your family, your community, and you spread all that love out in a platonic intimacy way, you have way more opportunities to have connection and fulfillment. And I think that's a much more satisfying way of living. So when I grew up in a neighborhood that was close, that was tight. And I knew most of the people in the neighborhood and most of the women didn't work. So, in fact, I only know one person who worked, and that was my sister's best friend. She lived across the street, and I thought she was such a modern and cool woman going to work every day because she was the only one. And what that meant for me growing up is that I could be outside playing until it was dark. somebody was always looking out the window. Somebody knew who you, where you were. And if you got into trouble, somebody was going to tell my mom. You know, if the kids started fighting, somebody was going to come and break it up. So we always were looked after. And I didn't realize the value of that until I was way into adulthood. And I talked to other people who didn't have that. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about with platonic intimacy. I really felt like I grew up in safety and in a place that I belonged. And even when I go back there today, it's, you know, that's a lot later and it doesn't look very nice now. It's pretty run down, but that's still, that home feeling is right there because there was so much love and safety there.
Don't you feel that people put way too much emphasis on romance as being like a solution to happiness? Because I feel like I grew up with that concept that, you know, you just should be on the lookout for that right person. And that's just going to settle everything for you. But I don't think it ever does. Even if you do find that right person, I feel like the challenge is to live with that person for many, many years if you do find somebody who's a good fit. And even that is, that can be uphill. That can be an uphill challenge. So how do you get people geared to, I guess, establishing stronger bonds of friendship to achieve platonic intimacy?
So I have a private community and it started out as a meetup group. And there was tons and tons and tons of people in there and they would come. We did spiritual things mostly. We'd have guest speakers and all of this. And what it ended up being is a small, so there's 3,000 people in the group, but there was a core of about 50 who would come all the time. And most of the 50 would come and get what they needed and leave. So meetup is founded on meet people. People were not meeting people. They were taking whatever the speaker had to offer and leaving. And I said, I don't want that. I don't want superficial relationships. I don't want big numbers. I want connections. Otherwise, what's the point? So I got off of that. I got off of social media. I started my private community and I invested in them. So I took the people who were really invested in each other. That was a few of the 50. And we hang out. And there are people, you know, you were talking about age groups. There's people in their 20s. There's elderly people. And if you're thinking about, you know, who would I want to hang out with? Probably not the people you would think about. But our relationships are kind of like the relationships that I had when I was a kid. So somewhere, I don't know if somebody told me this or if I discovered this, but relationships when you're a kid are based on proximity. It's like, who's available? Who's closest to you? You know, you don't say, hey, do you like this? You just do stuff. And that's what we do. So we're really, really interested in the relationship. So we listen to each other. So the types of things we do in the group is we have talking circles. So come say whatever's on your mind. I'll listen to you. It's that kind of thing. And again, as that space of being heard and being held, it creates connection. We do moon circles for women. We do bonfires. So we eat together. I think eating together is phenomenal. You've got to eat with your people. So it's nothing really, we don't do like big, exciting things. We do small, intimate things. We do connected things. And that's how we keep that neighborhood going inside our own hearts.
That's a great idea. I feel like that's so lacking nowadays, like more than ever.
Especially since COVID. Yeah.
Well, even before that though, because there's like a, I don't know, like a lack of connection in general more and more. And I would attribute it very much to people living vicariously through their phones. And I'm really encouraged to hear that you've got something like that, that's kind of rooted and it's a little deeper than superficial, because even going to a church, and there are a great number of churches in the US and some of them kind of more open-minded, some less open-minded. You know, you can take your pick pretty much, even in my area. But even going to church seems always to be a bit superficial. It's like people will smile and shake your hand. But it always feels like, I always have the feeling like I'm never really going to make any friends there, like real friends there. I felt that way in the past. I don't really go to church right now. But so, I mean, that's kind of why I gave it up. I felt like it was a superficial place, especially the evangelical churches. I mean, if you're not on board with everything they are, which is their politics and their, you know, heavy-handed rules and regulations that they come up with pretty much, then you don't feel welcome, basically. So I'm glad that you're kind of all embracing. And I would imagine that your group consists of people with different belief systems.
Oh, totally. Totally. And it's funny because I don't even know what everybody's belief system is because it doesn't typically come up. So we don't talk usually about politics. We don't talk about what's on TV. We don't talk about pop culture. It's really more meaningful conversations like, how are you? and waiting for an honest answer, not just, oh, I'm fine. How are you? We do that every Wednesday. Every Wednesday is check-in Wednesday. And there's a prompt, how are you? And it's an invitation to really share. So it's not just like, here's my selfie. Look how good I look. You know, it's not that at all. So you have permission to have a bad day. You have a permission to have a good day and share that. So it's really, it's about authenticity and showing up. And it's really, really appreciated. So I think people are more willing to do it.
So if you're in that group, can you talk about terrible things that have happened, you know, as well and yes. expect support?
Yes. So we are all about boundaries. So the only thing you really can't do is violate people's boundaries. But other than that, yeah, it's wide open. And thankfully, we have never had one incident of that. You know how there's always trolls and people trying to poke you to get something started? That has never happened. Knock wood. I hope it doesn't. But yeah, so far, so good.
Yeah, it's tough with groups. I've been a part of some groups in the past. Like I can think of a Rosicrucian group, like a study group that I was a part of in San Diego years ago. And I remember there was like a trouble causer there. And
there's always one.
We had to kind of notify him that everybody found him to be a trouble causer. And it was so awkward. I remember that as one of the most awkward experiences I've ever had to deal with in a group. And he was kind of bitter, actually, that we even voiced our concerns about him. And he didn't show up again. But, you know, these things are... Unfortunately, people are complex, and I feel like you can never totally assume that everybody's just going to get along.
True. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to get along, you know, because we are so different. But I think if you can chill and accept people as they are, don't take things personally, then that it's a reward too, to be around people who are so different, because that stretches me. You know, when I hear something I've never heard before, like, what are you talking about? That might be my initial reaction, but I'm usually going to lean into it later and be like, let me find out what it's talking about, you know, and right. That could be an open door to something I never knew before.
Yeah, I found that a little bit with like stitch and bitch sessions, you know, like knitting groups. I know this is really,
stitch and bitch.
This is really kind of out there in a way for some people, but what's cool is I've been to a few of those groups here in Southern California, and it was like a wide range of women, like older, younger, like much younger than I would have even anticipated. And it was kind of cool because you could just focus on talking about things that mattered and knitting somewhat. But I mean, it was like a leveling force, you know, everybody was into knitting, but nobody was judging anybody for anything.
Yeah.
So, and there was even a guy or two that would show up, and I felt that they had a lot of courage to do that.
Yeah, I love Fish and Bitch. I think it's a great way to connect with people for all the reasons that you said. I mean, you know, back in the day, women had outlets like that. Yep. We don't really have that now.
Yeah,
you know, we're in front of a computer all day, most of us. So what are you going to do?
I know. That's kind of the bummer of this age of technology is that we don't collaborate directly. It's only collaborating via email or text, sometimes a video call, and I think it's a bummer in a way.
Yeah, we don't craft either, which I think is a shame. You know, it's a way of using your creativity and your artistic juices and making something. We don't make things. Dinner, maybe. That's about it.
Yeah, you're right. Some of these things are a lost art.
Yeah.
They're going to go away if people don't try to use their time in a constructive way. And, you know, we all have those moments where we're alone and, you know, have unstructured time. Hopefully we have some of that. And why not do something artistic or something meaningful, create something useful with your hands? I mean, I think it's a meditative experience. And also I think about knitting a lot and how it's like a problem solving type experience. Because knitting is, you know, you've got these two sticks and the stitches on the sticks, and With a little ingenuity, and I don't like following patterns too much, but with a little ingenuity, you can kind of figure out how to do things once you get more and more familiar with it. The experience of it tends to create, it broadens your knowledge, and you can start trying things that you would have never thought you would try, like lace, which is a little more complicated. And there's so many different types of knitting that I think it keeps me forever curious. I have lots of knitting books even, and I know this is such a random thing to talk about, but it's like, it's almost mathematical to me. I'm not a math person, but yet I sometimes find myself counting stitches and trying to create things because I know I have like a little bit of a foundation of how to do it. And it takes a long time to get good at really producing a garment that's wearable and pretty. And that's always your aspiration. But I mean, you can just be creative and free form. And the cool thing is you're not, like with sewing, you're cutting stuff out and throwing away a lot of material that you can't use. And with knitting, you're actually taking a string pretty much and you're creating a garment out of it, which is so much more inventive, I think.
Yeah. I went to this, what was that? The Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death guy, his house for Memorial Day. And they had women there who were spinning thread.
Yeah.
So using that and knitting, and they were making food from scratch. So back like they did in a day. And I was just marveling at how wonderful that is. I mean, just to have your hands in it. This is the thing you're going to wear today. And this is the food you're going to eat today. We're not that involved in our own lives anymore. And I think that's such a shame.
Yeah. There's so many things you can do from scratch, so to speak, that people opt not to do. They go to a store and buy a fabricated item instead of just trying to make stuff themselves. But, you know, it's a time intensive process, I guess. And I think that's what people they don't always want to lend their time to that, but we're lending our time to social media, which is, not always productive or healthy.
The thing I like about crafts is you're in there. That's you, your time and your spirit is in there. So if you give it to someone, you've given them a piece of yourself.
Yeah. It's your design, your concept, and your effort, your labor and your love, really, that's putting those stitches together.
Yes. It makes it a cherished thing. Not just, I don't know. I think that's why it's so easy to buy things off the rack and to throw them away because they're not cherished.
Yeah. That's definitely an issue these days. So what are your spiritual practices from day to day that you do?
I hike most days, and being present in nature is definitely one of them. It clears the junk out of my head, but it also is a way of receiving whatever messages are meant for me that day. It's very simple, and I don't know that I've given it justice in the words that I've just used, but it's a really, really powerful way to start the day for me. And when I am not able to do that, or if I'm in a place like a city park, it's just not the same. I like to be in the forest covered by trees and hearing the birds and the crickets all around me. And, I like to feel that energy of the squirrels jumping in the trees. It just makes me feel more grounded and a part of life versus I'm moving through it. That's the big thing. Moon circles have also been really important in my life. And I didn't come to that until probably a decade ago, maybe a little bit longer. And that has helped me to tap more into my feminine. I was a tomboy forever. And that's not really something that I thought about, my identity as a female. And so I became a belly dancer until belly dance entered my life and entered my life. And then it just exploded what that means to be female. So those things are definitely a part of it. On days like the solstice, we'll do something too, just to mark the day and to really, I don't think you really even have to mark it because I can feel it. I can feel when the moon's changing. I can feel when the seasons are changing, especially when they're on the cusp because the energy is the strongest. And I like to just be a part of whatever's going on. And so I'll take a moment or even longer, really, just to tap into that. But it's not, I don't have a, like, go to church on Sundays. It's not that routine. It's more like mindfulness, just living with the energy that presents itself day to day.
And who do you feel you're connecting with on the spirit side? Is it your ancestors? Is it something like a greater intelligence? What is it?
Both. So definitely ancestral connection. And I don't have like, oh, there's Aunt Agnes. You know, it's not like that. I can feel which line that it comes from. I can tell if it's masculine or feminine. But it's not like I wouldn't personify it specifically. I do have an ancestor altar, and I tap in with that every day and just kind of give gratitude and listen to see if there's anything that I need to hear. And that's very grounding and supportive, I think. I mean, I think there's something bigger than that as well. But I think just having your toe in the water all the time, it makes it so that you don't, so that I don't have these big crashes, because I think I'm more aware of that they're coming and I'm more supported when they do come and those kinds of things.
Do you feel that you regulate yourself throughout the day somehow to avoid feeling down or overly emotional?
No. I have a really auspicious astrological chart. I have a grand trine in water for anybody who knows about astrology. Super easy emotionally, even though I'm triple water. I don't know if that's why I don't need to. I don't know if it's because I'm animist and I just kind of believe that everything is here for me, is a part of me. I don't know, but I've actually had a pretty easy life. You know, when you talk to people and they tell their story, there's always this catastrophe that you have to overcome. And I think we all have that, you know, the wound. I'm not saying that my life was easy. I've certainly had hard events, but I haven't ever had anything that's brought me down like that. So I don't know why. Is it because I'm supported by my ancestors? I don't really know.
Do you feel like when you're out in nature, this is kind of weird, but do you feel like you get messages from trees or plants or animals?
I love trees. I wouldn't say messages so much, but I do feel, so the other day, talking about this is kind of weird. I was walking and it was raining just a little bit. You could hear the rain on the leaves above, but there was enough leaf cover that wasn't really hitting me on the ground. And it was lovely. And I was coming out of the park and I sat on a bench because I just wanted to be there. And there was a beech tree right next to me. And I was getting this amazing smell. And I'm like, where's this smell coming from? And so I took a leaf from the beech tree and I just started to smell it. And then I sat there with it for like 5 minutes, just smelling it. I put it on my head. I put it on my hand and it smelled different every time. I don't know if it was the combination of the two of us together. I don't know what it was, but it just smelled different. And it was just delightful. And I felt like that I had met the trees, kind of like we shook hands and I got a sense of its essence and it got a sense of my essence. And we were sharing this moment. And so really it's more moments like that more than messages. It's like, I'm here, you're here, let's just be here, which is kind of what we do in talking circle and moon circle. And this may have started once I went to this place called West Kennet Longborough in England, in Wiltshire near Stonehenge. And I had been there before, but I felt like it was calling me. So I do get prompts like that. It was like calling me. I have to come back. So I put it on my schedule, got there. And it was the first place that I went to when I landed. And I trudged up the hill and I could go to the stones and I said, grandfathers, I am here. Why? What do you want from me? And the answer was that I wanted you to know that you don't have to be here to be here. So when I'm in a place and I'm taking it in, like I was taking in that leaf, when you really have the essence of a thing, it's with you always. And I don't have to be there to be there. I can call it up in my mind and it's like I am there now. And I think that's what I'm doing, you know, when I'm with a tree or when I'm with something. I just really want the experience of being here. One of the things that I do in my work is past life regression. And with all the regressions that I've done over the years, the giant theme is, people are not here. They sleepwalk through life. They do the same stupid stuff. And I'm talking about myself too, over and over and over. And when I saw that, I just said to myself, I want to be here. And so I've just really made it an effort to be here.
So that means to live in the moment and to be aware of your senses and all that's going on the spirit side and the embodied side as well. And yeah, I think, I mean, if that's kind of the one goal of this podcast, maybe it's just to know like that there's something more than just the driving to work routine, the eating food three times a day, whatever it is you're doing habitually. There is probably more than that. And I think that's the impetus for this podcast is just to make people aware of that, whatever it is. I mean, I think people have to define it for themselves. I think I'm animistic in some ways myself because I kind of feel the energy of plants and trees and flowers. And, you know, I love reading about how they've figured out that trees communicate with each other at the root and they kind of share things and, you know, they can actually block other trees and plants too. It's not all cuddly stuff, but it's, you know, there's a little bit of an animosity sometimes between plants and trees as well. And we humans know that very well. So, I mean, just knowing that there's an intelligence out there that's communicating around you when you're walking amidst it is, that's a cool thing to think about. And you can use your imagination and your imagination is a part of that collective world where we're all exchanging energy and maybe ideas, maybe we're exchanging ideas with trees, but we can be a part of that kind of symbiotic world, I think, and not call it far out or far-fetched. I think that science is slowly tuning into this and maybe more in the next 50 to 100 years.
Kids are all born animists. You know, they're already in touch with everything and they know everything has feelings. And then we tell them, no, that's not true. So I think it's in us. That connection is in us and that awareness that things are alive and they're conscious. And then it's just taught out of us.
Yeah, it's taught as something silly to dwell on as you get older. But, you know, just respecting life. If you want kids to respect life, if you want people in general to respect life, you have to teach them that it has some precious quality.
Yes.
It has always, this sounds probably absurd, but it has always hurt me when I see people destroying plants, cutting them down or pulling them out by the root or, you know, doing or carving up trees. I just don't understand it. Like it's kind of like a sacred force. Why would you do that? I don't get it myself. So, any other thoughts you want to leave us? What do you think people need the most these days?
Connection, however you can get it in a healthy way. I don't think it's coming from social media. I don't think it's coming from alcohol or hooking up. You know, a lot of ways that people distract themselves or try to find it. I think we're too picky. I think you can find it in an old man at the bus stop. You know, you can find it at the grocery store checkout line if you're open to it and you give as much as you take. I think what a lot of people do is that, like I said about my meetup, they would come in and they just take what they want and then they leave and there's no connection at all. There has to be a relationship. And that platonic intimacy is everywhere if you show up for it. So I think the key to loneliness is we all have it. You know, you just open your heart and give, and it comes back to you.
I'm glad you talked about that because I feel like it's missing too. And I think that it's not really a lot of effort to talk to people.
It's not.
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much for coming on, Laura. And I'll put a link to your website, which is your community, in the show notes for this episode if people want to join or otherwise use your services.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Blessed listener, please leave your questions or comments for this episode or any other episode at disembodiedpodcast.com. Thanks so much.